The Layered Butter Podcast acknowledges the Mississaugas of the Credit of the First Nation of the Anishinaabe people on the traditional territory that we are recording on. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to a new episode of the Layered Butter Podcast. My name's Raph.
My name is Jordan.
And I'm Rodrigo.
And we are your hosts for this podcast and this episode and every episode to come. And we've got an exciting new episode for you guys here today. Don't you think, guys? No?
Yeah, I'm pumped.
We'll see what happens.
But it's going to be exciting. It's going to be awesome. So we're glad to have you guys back on the airwaves here with us today. And we've got a great show for you. Rod, you got something to say about Layered Butter?
Yeah, just that, you know, if you haven't checked it out, like you should head over to layeredbutter.com. You know, our Christopher Nolan issue is almost sold out. Our James Bond issue is getting there. And we will be announcing a date for Modern Horror finally pretty soon. So stay tuned for that.
And don't forget, folks, for to share this podcast with everyone you know, if you can and if like us. And don't forget to review it, rate it, but we will only take your rating if you give us 5 stars. That's it. But I mean, put in your comments so we could make the podcast better. If you want me out of as host and Jordan take over, that's okay too. Or Rod takes over too, whichever. But we'll give it a shot for season two.
Just a single 5-star comment that says, Raph, get the hell out, and you're gone.
You can drop that's it on my letterbox, right? because, you know, some of my hot takes are there too, right? So we can look at some of the movies that I've been seeing. But yeah, welcome back. And we want to introduce for this week's episode an old friend of mine back from the high school days. But please put your hands together or your ears together, I guess. For Serena Pereira. Hello.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. It was lovely to reconnect. And we wanted to get Serena on for this episode because we are tackling something very, very interesting this week. And I guess it'll give a little bit of insight to movie making today and how it's affecting everything in that industry in terms of COVID protocols. But Serena, why don't you tell us a little bit of what you do and your little mark on the industry so far?
My little mark. So I'm a recently graduated student, actually. I graduated back in April. And since then, I managed to get my first gig in the industry. And it happened to be as a COVID PA on the set of the new Chucky TV series.
So we got to give a shout out. And congratulations on graduating and also landing your first gig to one of our Layered Butter colleagues, Andrew Perucho. He texted me before we did this episode and he said, yo, you got to tell Serena that Chucky is amazing. He's a huge, huge fan of it. I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet, but I've heard great things about it. But congrats on landing your first gig.
Thank you. Yeah, I know I'm a little biased, but I think it's pretty good too. I've been watching it as it's been coming out.
Rod, Jordan, what's your take on Chucky in general?
I'm not a huge fan of the horror genre, but recently the Chucky franchise had I don't know how many movies ago it was, but Andrew Perucho is actually the person that sent this to me. They had a child, Tiffany, I think, is his spouse. I don't know what the family relationship is, but they had a child and it was like a non-binary child.
Oh, yeah,
and
gender fluid.
Yeah. And so apparently this, I think even in this series, like one of the lead characters is a queer kid, unless I'm mistaken. And so there's a whole lot of diversity there, which is fascinating to me because typically for me, that genre is kind of like the final white girl will survive and everybody else that is like some version of diversity ends up dying along the way. So cool. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, this series in particular is like amazing for a queer rep. And even I was surprised because I don't have a huge background in Chucky, but it's very progressive and it's great for representation.
Jordan, any thoughts on Chucky?
I have never seen any of the Chucky movies, but that's the only part of the franchise that's ever made it into my bubble is that It's surprisingly progressive in a lot of really interesting ways.
This is a very ignorant question, but does Chucky have like the strength beyond that of a doll? Because like, I understand he has like a murderous rage, but could we not put him in some type of, I don't know, like box that he could not out of?
Do you know? Well, do we know the context?
You would know that dolls,
like, I mean, why he is the way he is?
No, as per my previous comment, I have not seen any Chucky.
Oh yeah, you're right. You have no idea. Oh my god.
Oh, I was just going to say that it's funny to talk about the strength of a doll as if dolls have muscles and like the ability to move anyway. So like, I don't know how strong a doll would be if it could move, but.
But one would assume that it is of whatever material, like you could calculate how tense that material can get and, you know, like so on.
Yeah, very
I don't think like a doll could carry a car. It doesn't seem logical to me.
I mean, we've all seen Small Soldiers or Toy Story. So maybe Chucky's the next tier above it. Because whenever I see, like, in Small Soldiers, when there was this toy that got stuck in, like, the drainage, and all he did was spin and spin and spin until he was, like, killed. And that's all I'm thinking about. I'm thinking, what if you just put Chucky in there? But I guess he can pull himself out, but I don't know.
I guess you just have to watch and see.
Yeah. Anyway, we've been hijacked. We jumped into the Chucky rabbit hole. But this episode's all about, I guess, the experience of filming a major television show or production to COVID. Serena is going to give us an insight on how it is and maybe give us a tease on what's next to come with Chucky. So before we get into all of that, let's do a little pre-show, everyone. But there was a recent survey or study done by BBC that shows that many younger people in this generation have been consuming a lot of television, but they prefer to be watching their television with subtitles. I'm a huge fan of closed captions and CC whenever I watch anything. I just think it's way too difficult to even follow sometimes with the dialogue, whether it is just terrible sound mixing or everyone mumbles. So I'm totally down for it. I think it's interesting that more of the younger people are adding it in to their experience rather than just the older generation. I feel like maybe I'm just terribly biased about this or making an assumption that, you know, the new kids would just prefer watching it the way it is rather than dealing with reading something on the screen, right? Maybe I'm just relating it to my experience with watching foreign films or anything like that, subtitles, but I don't know. Serena, any thoughts?
Oh, I'm totally guilty of this. I will turn on subtitles for almost anything. And I feel like it kind of has to do with my own attention span for the most part, because I find that if there's the words on the screen, I'm less likely to like look away from them, even though if it's in English and I can like understand it, I'm still like, oh, there's words there for me to read. I won't look at the smaller screen in front of me as well. So,
no, I do it the same way. Yeah. I don't know. Rod, Jordan, thoughts? Hate it, love it.
I'm a big fan. I guess like I overall I'm a big fan. I would say I'm not surprised. I think we often dismiss younger, and I say this like as whatever we are, like geriatric millennials or whatever the term is for.
No, we're millennial.
Yeah,
anyway.
Like, you know, like we're kind of dismissive of younger people and their appreciation of art, and I think they just have a different way of doing things. And just because things are different doesn't mean they are inherently worse. I will say with subtitles, I'm of two minds. Like one, I'm a big fan of writing. And so I do enjoy getting to see like the craft that writers have put into it and analyzing like the words very specifically. But the downside is that I do feel like sometimes the people that are adding the closed captions have maybe as we use them more, we will improve this. But I do find that sometimes they spoil the beat that is about to happen. And so I don't know if maybe there is some extra work that could be done there to make sure that as the words are appearing at the absolute right time that they should be.
I was actually going to say that was going to be my take, that I like the idea of subtitles. I can see why the younger generation likes them, especially with regards to them being used to like TikTok, where the captioning is just like like it's built into like every single video. So maybe that's a reason why the youngs are doing that. But I'm definitely of the mindset that like if I'm rewatching something, I like subtitles, because then I feel like you catch the little things that you didn't get the first time. Like you see something spelled out, you see the name of something and you get it. But when I'm watching something for the first time, I feel like they often just spoil the end of a line. Like you read it before you hear it.
Yeah.
And it just really puts me out of whack with like paying attention to the performance and paying attention to the rhythm of the dialogue. And like, I don't know, I don't watch most things with subtitles unless I can't understand. Like the last thing I watched with subtitles was every episode of Dairy Girls on Netflix. Cause I could not understand those girls. So,
I mean, I remember watching Hamilton, the Disney, I guess performance. And I was thinking to myself, wow, you know, my original experience with Hamilton was going to be on stage, like at the theater. And then I feel like I would have a less appreciation of Lin-Manuel's lyrics because on stage, just because it'll be difficult for me to understand because of the delivery of every line. Whereas when I was watching it at home, I had the opportunity to put the subtitles on and I could read every line that came out clearly, right? Because mind you, Hamilton's like really, really fast. And I feel like some of those shows, like, you know, any Aaron Sorkin, David Fincher shows or movies, that come on with really spitfire dialogue, sometimes you're going to miss some of the nuance in the writing. So I will watch subtitles, everything. I don't get why people would be like, well, you can't watch a performance. I'm like, train your eyes.
to do that, to look in like...
I mean, not to be devil's advocate, but I would say that like you can't see everything if you're reading, right? Like that is just true. I'm not saying that you see enough that you're
satisfied, or
that you're able to have a good exactly. But I would say, like for example, to your Hamilton thing, if you didn't have the lyrics there in the performance, you probably wouldn't have been able to capture the lyrics as much. But your attention would be elsewhere, more detailed to something else, right?
Right, like Lin-Manuel's performance. But sure.
I mean, is that when you were gonna go?
No. I was making a joke. But what's it called? I guess like I had a friend of mine. I remember watching Parasite, and I showed it to a buddy of mine, and he's like, "Man, I couldn't really get into it because of the subtitles, right?" And I said, "But the story and everything is like, yeah, I get it, but it ruined my experience, right?" So I don't know.
I mean, I also think we have to consider that people read at different speeds and for a variety of different reasons, right? And so sometimes subtitles isn't an optimal experience for everyone.
I also think it's a big difference between watching something that is in the language you speak and you want subtitles at the same time versus like you need the subtitles to experience the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? You bring up something very interesting, Jordan, which will merge into our next pre-show topic, which is Suyi. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Suyi is a film that is entirely shot in the native Blackfoot language. And it's making waves right now because it is a language that is not commonly used in film and even in everyday life. It is native tribal language that is, I don't want to say is dying out, but it is becoming more scarce, right? In anthropology, but also in culture. And this film, Suyi, is making a world premiere on tribal land in Montana as part of the Montana Film Festival. And I wanted to bring this up because I think it's super interesting, at least from this article that I was reading for The Miscellanean by Brian D'Ambrosio, because they're framing this film as not only a step forward for Native American and indigenous filmmaking, but also as a way for art to capture a language, right? It's a language that is now threatened with maybe being assimilated or disappearing completely, right? Because it's not taught in schools or it's not brought down through their cultural bloodlines. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a major thing. And I remember watching, what was it? It was Westworld, right? Westworld had one episode based on a war chief. I forgot. Akcheta? I don't know. That just sounded like me just stuttering. I'm sorry. But no, and that entire language, I mean, that entire episode was maybe 90%. And I think it was Iroquois Cree. I could be wrong. But it's fascinating to have the art nowadays be framed as a tool to preserve culture, right? So, Rod, any thoughts, ideas, tidbits?
I think, and I'm not trying to call you out here, but more so I just want to make sure that But it's like sometimes when we frame these things, it kind of we make it seem like it's a passive loss as opposed to an active eradication of the language that they were victim of because of colonization, right? And I come from Peru. We were colonized by the Spanish people in very similar situation. You know, like we speak Spanish very fluently. My second language that I learned in school was English. You know, we never learned Quechua or Aymara, which are like the first languages of the people that used to live there, right? And so I think to see this kind of thing, like a very active participation in the arts, is a great way to be able to promote a culture that unfortunately, through no fault of their own, could disappear. And, you know, like and this one in particular, like I think as Canadians, we should take it to heart because the Blackfoot Confederacy does like that one that started from Montana, but it goes all the way into Alberta. And so there's a lot of commonalities there because obviously for them, you know, it was all Turtle Island. It wasn't a division between the US and Canada. So I think it's really cool. I'm very happy to see it.
Yeah. Jordan?
I think this is really an interesting movie that they're making. And it speaks to the power of cinema, especially the power of cinema on people who are young. And I think, you know, all of us here can remember seeing something in film, hearing something in film at a young age that just like really stuck with you. And I think it's amazing that people in this culture are going to get that for the first time. And that's something that I've, you know, I'm a white guy. I've come to like understand that the sorts of privilege I had as a kid growing up and seeing myself represented out in the world isn't what everyone else had. So things like this are important, and it's a real gift to that next generation and a gift to that culture.
Yeah, no, 100%. Serena?
Yeah, I think this kind of art preservation work is so important and so timely, especially now, given everything that's been happening in recent current events. And it's great to see that they're doing it, and it's so unfortunate that it has to happen this way, that we need to be doing preservation instead of just making the art. But it's really great to see, though, that this is happening. And hopefully for other dying languages, people start thinking based on this and based on other things that are happening, thinking forward about this kind of art preservation.
No, 100%. So anyone from Montana or who has the would be nearby to the premiere, Suyi is premiering at the Montana International Film Festival. End of the month, or actually, no, it might be happening right now. So hopefully you guys saw it. We got more for you on this pre-show, and this is super interesting. I wanted to talk about Mel Gibson, but I thought, why? So I wanted to bring up Asghar Farhadi, who is making a little bit of waves, potentially affecting his Oscar chances politically in regards to his home country, which is Iran. Iran has now submitted his newest film, A Hero, which is one of the best films of the year, to be withdrawn from the Oscar race. And the reason for this is on Instagram, Farhadi released this, I guess, post in regards to the Iranian government, in which that he was anti-government, that he is pro-government. And he was rejecting the fact about how Iran is making comments and delivering extremist medias and even affect his own films and artwork in his own career. So Farhadi is actively trying to downplay his film and potentially get it off the Oscar ballot in defense of his own beliefs. Rod, any thoughts? You saw A Hero with me and you loved it, I hope.
Yeah, it was great. In terms of Asghar Farhadi, I think, you know, the Iranian government is not the most open-minded and open to dissent, or, you know, and especially in terms of Farhadi's film, they haven't been particularly subtle about how they feel about a lot of his previous work. And so for them now to try to capitalize on his success and present try to take a certain amount of ownership over this piece of art, I do think is a total corruption of what this man stands for. I do think that it is tricky in general, the way that we kind of intersect politics into things that are outside of politics. Mm. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but rather that it is more complicated. For example, like the idea of participating in the Olympics that are going to be in China, right? Like what is the obligation that athletes have or that we as viewers potentially have? Likewise, for Farhadi, like, or people voting for this movie or not voting for it because of potential political implications, like what are those other additional thoughts that you have to layer on top of how you feel about the movie specifically, right? Like I'm not saying that you should shy away from having difficult and complex thoughts on politics, but I do think that it adds an additional challenge that perhaps wasn't there for other films or wasn't there before.
Gotcha. Good point. Serena, any thoughts? Have you seen an Asghar Farhadi film?
I have not. I have seen the trailer for this one. I know. I've been meaning to. but yeah, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's his piece of work, and he should have that kind of autonomy over it in order to exercise his own beliefs, right? Like, that's kind of the whole point of it.
Yeah, I think...
But yeah, unfortunately, right. I haven't been able to see it yet, so...
No, but I think you find... you mentioned something super interesting in the sense that, you know, every filmmaker should have their autonomy over their own work. Rod, you bring up something, does everything need to be politicized in that sense? But there should be also some sort of responsibility of being an artist, specifically to maybe to your country or to your own specific beliefs, right? Jordan, thoughts?
I haven't seen the movie, but it is really interesting. Bruh. Rodrigo, you mentioned the Olympics, because I was immediately thinking about how, like, well, the Olympics solved this with the fact that athletes can be independent. You know, they can still be, they can still show up at the Olympics and partake with pride, show off their skills and not be tied to a nation. And it just seems like, why haven't we done the same thing with movies? Like, let people tie it to their national identity if they want to, but I don't know. It seems like categorizing art by country it's no wonder we run into issues like this. And I'm wondering, have there been other situations in the past? I don't know if anyone knows where people have voluntarily tried to get their own film out of Oscar contention as an act of protest like this.
I can't imagine it, but I mean, I feel like all you got to do, let's say if you're a producer or a director, you'll just destroy your distributor and say, no, this is not going for it, you know, and just ruin its chances. Or you could just be like Joaquin Phoenix, who just does not want to even bother in the entire Oscar race, right? And just completely ignore everyone. But I don't know. Maybe a story for another time, but for now, I think we are going to get ready for our main feature. And Serena, this is all about you and Chucky. So we will be right back.
The Layered Butter Podcast is brought to you by another podcast. That's right. Your podcast is in another castle is everyone's favorite video game podcast, brand new podcast. IGN Who, to be honest. Every week, join Jordan, Diego, and yours truly in a weekly adventure where we tackle the latest video game stories, answer all the important questions, and have some fun chatting with friends. No? Find your podcasts in another castle on all your favorite podcast places, and make sure to check them out on social media at Another Castle CA.
And we are back. Welcome back to Layered Butter. We are here, Jordan, Raph, and Rod, with our good friend, Serena Pereira, who had the opportunity to work on Chucky, the TV series, which is shot here in Toronto. And she had experience of being a COVID PA. So we wanted to kind of dig your brain and your experience about everything that, you know, that happens recently, because I guess I can compare it to my experience later on, but why don't you give the audience and maybe us kind of some context of how you got in and what it entails and a little bit of, you know, your experience with Chucky.
Yeah, for sure. So it was a lot of luck for me getting in, honestly. I'd been kind of, you know, joining all of these Facebook groups because that's what I'd heard is the way get these kinds of PA gigs here and there. So I joined a bunch of Toronto-based, you know, I need a production assistant kind of groups. And it just so happened that one day I was scrolling through, I saw a posting for COVID PA, didn't need much experience. I applied, had the interview the same day, and started the following week. So yeah, it was kind of a whirlwind, and I really chalk it up to a lot of luck getting that position in the first place, because all I'd been wanting for so long was just an opportunity to get on a set.
And not to mention, this is a major set, folks. For those, I mean, obviously it's Chucky, but I mean, to get onto a major set right after school. And Serena, sorry, what program did you graduate from?
Yeah, so I actually went to the University of Toronto, and I didn't do film production per se. I did what's called cinema studies.
That's what I did.
So it's a lot of writing about film.
Yeah.
It's a lot of professional letterboxed, you know?
Oh, professional letterboxed. Nice.
I also did English because I'm primarily a writer. I consider myself a writer. And so that's kind of the realm I wanted to be in. But yeah, I wanted to get on a set, and I was able to get on a set. And I still hadn't finished my last assignment when I started the job. So that first week was kind of insane. But
It blows my mind that you mentioned that you were you did English as well. I double majored in cinema media studies, and my second major was English because I did the same route. Yeah. COVID PA. So just to give some context out there, when I first got my first job out of school, I became a wrangler. A wrangler being a cable wrangler, non-union, on a YTV television show called The Stanley Dynamic, which is like a sitcom. And I had no idea what the heck I was doing, right? And this was way before COVID times. So there's like 50 people on a set, and all I did was wrangle cable. I was just lucky enough because I called up the production manager and said, hey, hook me up with a job. And luckily they did. And from there, I worked up to be an AD and worked in, and I got into the DGC, which is a union. But COVID protocols, what's up with that? Tell us more about this and how from a regular PA, which is production assistant or set AD, which is kind of your forerunner if you're on a set. Right. We wrangle cast, we wrangle crew, and we make sure the set is for the first AD. So, yeah, COVID protocols.
So I would say being a COVID PA is probably as different as it gets to being a set PA. I would say really the only similarity is that you're both on set all the time and around the cast. But basically what it involved was really just making sure that the COVID protocols were being followed. So there's a lot of stages of how people even get into the set at the beginning. Like the way that COVID affected the set was just immeasurable in that you need to get a wristband to get into any part of the set. And that involves, you know, you get your fever, your temperature taken when you enter the building. You have to wear like a tracing device to make sure like who you're coming in contact with so they can keep track of all of those things. And so my job specifically, like our department, I would say was about, there were about 15 people in the department and everybody had kind of different roles, but there was about four or five COVID PAs. So my position and what that mainly entailed was being on the set, making sure everybody's wearing their masks, giving out masks to people who aren't wearing them, as well as handling the cast PPE. So they have like these shields that they kind of wear. Because, you know, they have makeup and stuff. So they have these clear shields that they wear. So we handle that between takes. We run air purifiers between all the takes as well. And we have to stick them into the corners of all the sets, making sure that they're not visible and anything like that. So it's a lot of things you wouldn't think of, but need to happen in order to keep the production running during the pandemic.
I was going to mention this because you and I probably have most experience here on set. No offense to Jordan and Rod, who's listening in intently. But I wanted to ask Jordan and Rod, you know, the idea of working on a set and everything like this, from what you're hearing from Serena, is this exactly what you were thinking? Or is it completely different from you? How you think a set would have been run, you know, during COVID times? Or even comparison to what you would think how sets were run even prior to? Jordan?
I think my only experience in how sets are run during COVID times is hearing Tom Cruise freak out at his crew. So I'll say, yeah, sounds like they're taking things pretty seriously. So doesn't sound too surprising, but.
Rod?
Yeah, I guess I would imagine that as our science and understanding has evolved throughout this, I would imagine that I guess, limitations that they've had for filming or the steps that they have to take have probably also evolved. I don't know. Like, I probably also think that they are they tend to be on the overly cautious side of things, you know, because I guess like a positive has more than effect of just like, oh, you can't come in ready, could potentially, you know, stop filming or stop production for days.
Oh, for sure. And especially we were operating in a pre-vaccine world as well, because it was, we started back in, well, I personally started in April, but they'd been in pre before that. But, you know, in Canada, we only really started getting the vaccines.
Like June, is that right?
At least
May?
In our,
I don't know.
Like May, and then by second dose was June, yeah, kind of thing, you know? Right. So it was a lot of precautions had to be taken because there were no, there was no preventative measures in our system.
So are, I remember, sorry.
Oh. Oh, sorry. I was just going to ask, like, these rules that have come down, are they coming down from something that the guilds are setting or that the unions are setting? Or is it the production companies who are deciding the specific rules that each production is going to follow?
Yeah, so it was it was both under, like, Toronto Public Health as well as NBC Universal, which is, like, you know, the parent company of the production. So it was in accordance with both of their policies.
Yeah. I was going to add that every specific union, so DGC, IATSE, NABET, or whoever, right, is part of each production, will have their own protocols. There's usually a steward that comes in here and there, right, that checks in on everyone. But at least I know for DGC, there was a mandate, right, of how these sets should be run. Toronto Public Health and each guild were in communication. So I wanted to bring up one of the most interesting things is when this entire COVID thing started, which was what, like 2020? Bruh, it's been too long. But I mean, a lot of my friends were working and then all of a sudden they shut down in the summer of 2020 and they didn't know when they were going to come back to work. And as things started opening up, Toronto Public Health started shutting down specific industries. There were moments where some like the film industry were shut down for X amount of time, and then new protocols came out where they're able to move forward with filming, tighter spaces, less background on set and everything like that. But these are all mandated from public health units, but also, which is super interesting, when you mention NBC and I guess the parent companies, did you have a presence on set from these guys, any head office folks, or
we had a visitor for quite some time from NBC who kind of worked over our department, especially making sure everything was running smoothly and taking concerns from all the other departments, because, you know, it's a completely new department. They have to kind of set the parameters of and the expectations of what we're supposed to be doing and how people are receiving right. that and how it's affecting the processes of everybody else's work as well. So yes, there was presence from NBC, and there were a couple of days where we had other visitors coming to the set, making sure that everything was.
Okay. I mean, I get it. It's like trial or error, right? So I mean, you're gonna have departments trying their best to adapt to everything changing, and I'm sure too when protocols change over the course of the year, right? You guys may have to adjust. Or maybe even production had to adjust, whether it's major or small, but we'll get into that in just a bit too. But there's a lot of moving pieces, right? One of the key things I wanted to bring up is, as we all know, the film industry is multi-billion dollars, right? So there's brand new protocols that get added each and every time. As far as I know, I haven't been on a set in a while, but there was testing days and there's new departments coming in. And by having these ideas, as you mentioned, Serena, Jordan and Rod as well. You know, this is a money-making industry. And with these new departments coming in, safety measures being put in play, you can't help but wonder, about the budget of these production companies. Let's say Pirates of the Caribbean had $100 million dedicated to this. And then all of a sudden, COVID hits. And now they have to hire new departments, new cast, new et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what, another, I don't know, 10 million or X amount of that initial budget going to those departments. Rod and Jordan, do you feel like these new protocols or these new departments have shaped the way productions have been produced during this time, or have you even noticed anything at all?
So are you saying like do productions feel like they have to cut costs elsewhere to make up for that?
100%, right? Yeah, whether it's cast, whether it's scale production,
scenes, I feel stunts, like where I have noticed it has been in less crowd scenes, kind of thing, like that they've had to alter, not necessarily for budgetary reasons, but probably for logistical reasons to keep in check with COVID protocols, that there's a lot more scenes with like individual people as opposed to like perhaps there used to be this would have been like a cast moment, and then instead they've rethought it to film it differently. In terms of budget, I don't know too much about like how they make adjustments, but I don't think that this must be the only time where they've had to figure out, like, say, for example, when they do reshoots, right? Like, where does that money come from, or so on?
Some person's deep pockets.
Yeah, so I would imagine that maybe it's like that, right? Like, it's just come earlier on than at the end of the film.
Jordan, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. As we've talked about, I don't know anything about film production and TV production, but as a watcher of these things, it's definitely something that's in the back of my head of like, oh, they had to film it this way because this was filmed during COVID. Like, I remember the second season of Ted Lasso, I couldn't help but notice that every crowd shot, if you look really closely, it's not even the same people. It's, you can tell that each row of people was filmed separately and then digitally stitched together. And you can, if you look for it, you can almost see the fact that there's like the layers of the scenes. Like it's a crowd shot that would have been cheap to film before. Right.
And you know, like Serena, I'm sure you're a big fan of TV and movies, but even before getting into your gig, which is 2021, right? Did you feel that in terms of some of the media you consumed back in 2020?
I think I definitely noticed it when I was watching things. But what was interesting was at the job itself, I wouldn't say that there were any sort of moments in Chucky that you would really notice that. Like everybody was kind of meticulously tested. We ran the purifiers between everything, but we had crowd shots. We had intimate kind of moments between characters. Everybody was extremely careful, especially on those days, of course, and especially with where background was kept and everything like that. But I was honestly kind of surprised with, I think it was organized in a way where they could still let that stuff happen.
And they made it happen anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I wanted to bring this up because you mentioned it like a couple times. The air purifier. So tell me more. Yeah. Just because I remember when we were on set and then that we ran ACs when it was really, really hot before every take, and then they would cut it each and every time. What is this air purifier? Like, because isn't COVID spread through the air? Fake news? What's going on?
Well, they're specifically for purifying. But yeah, basically what they were was, they were these little machines that we would have stationed in basically like, I don't know, the four corners of whatever tiny set they're working on. And so of course the big pain to turn them on and off between every take.
Locations?
But you know, you have people taking their masks off to speak in a closed room, and you have everybody there. Everybody's worried. People are still not vaccinated. And so it's also peace of mind as well as the best we could do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so they were a bit annoying to always get to because they have to be hidden in these weird corners. And like you were saying, for costs, like it adds to time, it adds to budget, it adds to all of these things. And it, in a way, it impedes the creative process of filming. But these are just the measures that have to be taken in order for people to feel safe and in order for the production to keep going, you know?
No, I hear you. I was just so fascinated that you said purifiers. So, you know, I wanted to mention, and I'm pretty sure I mentioned this before in another episode, but there was a couple of shows or a TV, whatever, a TV, movies, whatever, that was in 2020 that were in production, then they shut down, and then they resumed filming later in the year or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whichever. But I noticed that the later half of whatever season or whatnot, they've tried to discreetly change the way they shot the film or a TV show. In this case, it was Fargo. Fargo season 4 had a really big change where sometimes their hair looked off or some of the kids grew older over the time that they paused for filming. And there were so many scenes where rather than having all the main characters in one scene, you would just have one or two. Mind you, this was before all the major COVID protocols were put into place today, as we know today, where testing is done all the time and vaccines were a thing. Now, I wanted to bring up that, you know, back in 2020 or early 2020, when some of these shows came back, they never had this and they didn't know what to do. I feel like a lot of people were just spitballing here and they said, we got to get this production finished so that they can move on with their next contracts. But that was my little tidbit. I wanted to mention and I wanted to ask Serena. So there's this big thing and I don't want to spread fake news here, but where a lot of celebrities, like let's just say, because Miles Teller recently came out to clarify that, guys, I am vaccinated, right?
Letitia Wright. Let's name names here.
But, you know, it's a thing where stars are either pro-vaccine or anti-vax. And I've come to wonder, guess many people wonder as well, if these, if there are mandates for these stars or, you know, actors to be vaccinated. I don't, is there a vax mandate for staff too and crew? Do you know? That's something you could shed light on?
So honestly, at this point, I'm not too sure. While we were in production, it never got to that point where there was a mandate for it. But also, we have to remember that when we were in production, people were still getting vaccinated.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't like now when it's kind of expected mm-hmm. that everybody's had their two doses for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like it was still being rolled out throughout the summer as we were shooting.
Yeah.
So at the time, there was no mandate on set.
Rod, I guess I'll open the floor here. But do you think it should be you need to do an attestation or you need to get double vax to work on sets? Like, just to give context, we don't know if there's a mandate right now, at least in Toronto and Canada, to be anything like that, because I think they're doing testing. But in some workplaces, at least here in the GTA in Toronto, some workplaces are mandating a vaccination policy. And if not, you don't work, right? Thoughts? Do you think this should be also imposed on crew and talent?
Sure. Yeah, my opinion. I am pro-vaccine, of course. Should it be imposed? I think it should just be up to the studios and how they want to run productions. I'm sure the ones who don't impose it will be making their intentions clear and will only attract people that also are in their camp. So I don't know. Who's the imposer in this situation? Are you talking like, should the government say like all film productions should?
Well, production. Yeah. So for example, like I don't think Toronto Public Health would get involved in this. They may say, hey, you guys got to do this, but I think it's mm-hmm. going to be more of the studios, right? So let's say Netflix, Sony, or whoever will tell their production companies, hey guys, this has to be mandated, right? So that is my theory and my idea of where it comes from. I mean, top of the line, right? Rod, you believe that it should be?
Yeah, I don't think this may be controversial on a film podcast talking to somebody in the industry, but it's like, I don't feel like any particular industry is important enough to us as civilization that they should be able to loop around public health and safety rules. Like, that's kind of where I land on this. So if the recommendation for everybody is if you're going to be in crowded spaces to be vaccinated or potentially be taking daily tests, like if that is a sufficient level for public health officials, I'm happy with that. If they are not, I don't want any particular carve out for, and I'm not trying to call it specifically like the Hollywood industry. I think this is true of everyone, like restaurants or whatever the case may be. Like whatever the recommendations of public health officials are, I think we should respect that. And, you know, if there's actors or crew members or people who don't want to abide by either the vaccines or the testing, I don't think anybody is as instrumental enough for us in society that we should be out here risking lives to accommodate them, right? Like if Meryl Streep came out tomorrow and was like, I'm anti-vax, fuck these people, I would be like, let's recast this woman because we shouldn't be endangering crew who deserve the same amount of health and respect as anybody else, right? And obviously, too, if you're not respectful of those boundaries, you can then exacerbate the situation and become like a heavy load on the healthcare system of a particular location because you're not able to follow rules. And that affects us all, right? Not just the movie industry.
You bring up a very interesting point
about Meryl Streep being anti-vax.
But any star, right? Like, I know you kind of whispered her name here as we began this section.
Oh, Letitia Wright. I did not whisper it. I said it loudly.
Okay. But, roundtable discussion here. But let's just say Letitia Wright or X person decides to say, yeah, you know what? My politics don't jive with the public health mandates, and I don't wish to get vaccinated, or I don't wish to participate in testing and anything like that. But this X person is a major star that's going to be in major productions going forward, right? And it's just, I'm going to relate it to basketball with like Kyrie Irving, who's refusing to get vaccinated, but, and he's not playing any games and he's losing XX amount of dollars worth. But should studios pull these stars out, even if they know they're going to lose X amount of money? Is this something that is right and potentially, could destroy someone's career out of? I know, Rod, you're already totally saying, yeah, 100%.
I mean, I would also say that kill somebody's career, like they're just like chilling for 5 minutes until we're done this and then they can come back. Like, I'm not saying they should be banned from society, but I don't think that anyone's particular talent is necessary. Like at the end of the day, though, I will say, like, the question is like, should they or will they? And I will say that capitalism is so infecting every part of our society that they will absolutely not ban any major star that can bring in money but is not willing to get vaccinated. I think that is very
public
unlikely.
Outcry. How about public outcry? I mean, everyone can...
Okay, it shouldn't be dependent on public outcry, though. It should be like, what are the rules? Okay, respect the rules or you can't work. Like, it shouldn't be like, oh, Mel Gibson is doing this, so we all hate him, but all of a sudden, like, not Tom Hanks is like anti-vax, and now, like, well, let's like keep Tom Hanks in mind. Like, it should be whatever the rules are, people should follow it. If you can't follow it, you can't work. When the rules are changed and you can work again, cool, we will see you then.
Do you think that person will get hired again?
I mean, unless you're going to go like on a tirade about like fuck vaxes or whatever, like, I don't think so. I don't, like, there's not like a black mark or like, I think you should be fine.
You know, the moment you said tirade, I was thinking about Jordan and Tom Cruise. I was like, what kind of tirade here are we talking about?
I'm just, can we request that we just make an edit at the end of this episode of just Rodrigo saying like all the celebrity, like every sentence where he says so-and-so is anti-vax and we just put that all together at the end.
Meryl Streep.
Name and names.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eh? But another thing I wanted to bring up too, which is super interesting with a lot of, as we talk about jobs and this idea of, maybe elitism in terms of the industry, there was at one point where the film industry, at least in the GTA in Toronto, did not shut down, where major like retailers, food industry, all these other places shut down completely. And a lot of people were furloughed or they lost their jobs. But in the film industry, they were allowed to keep working, right? So there, and I don't believe they had these protocols in place in terms of, strict vax mandates or anything like that. They just had, testing, regularly testing and stuff like that. If we have such a major shortage in I guess the food, let's say the food industry or construction industry and anything like that because of certain mandates, and they all flock towards the film industry as a way to get past all that, right? Do you think that it's fair for something like the film industry to take, all those people or even start rejecting people for their work as well as a new career path? Is that making sense, Rod?
Like, I it's just kind of echo my previous position that it's like, I don't feel the... Like right now, it is like a world pandemic. Like, I don't want to like stress people out or be like Chicken Little, I guess, to tie it back into movies about the world is ending. But it is like an unprecedented set of events that is occurring right now. And so if like, I'm just saying, like, let's listen to public officials. If they say that you can work safely in the film industry, let's do it. I don't have anything against it. I'm not trying to also punish people for being actors, like, and pretend that their work is not significant. It is. Like, we love movies. I love movies. I host a podcast about movies because I love them so much. But I don't think that any one industry is important enough that they should supersede whatever the recommendations are to keep us safe and to be able to get through this, right? Like, I'm not a fan of carve out anywhere.
Fair enough. Jordan, Serena, feels? Any feels?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that, like, the film industry shouldn't and doesn't exist above any other industry in that respect, whereas, like, they don't need to follow these guidelines. They exist above it. I don't believe that at all. But I think the difference is that they have the infrastructure and potentially the budget for this kind of rigorous testing that allows them to keep operating, whereas other industries might not be able to make that. So, like Rod's saying, like, there's no... It's not that the industry supersedes it because it's so important. It's just that it has the ability to, where others might not.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a money thing, right? Because tax credits, and then if the economy is bleeding, they're going to want more productions to come to Canada to start working. Who knows?
I mean,
it's all politics.
A big thing is just that they could do it, and then they did do it. And there was lots of industries that also kept working during COVID. They just were necessarily not as public facing as... in the media, sure, as like a film production, right? There's plenty of private companies that kept doing what they're doing and meeting and like working on projects and stuff. But film was public facing, and a lot of the other public facing things like restaurants and hotels and everything were shut down. So yeah.
Tourism.
But I don't know.
Yeah. I was going to mention too, and maybe Serena could also bump in here, but when you work on set, it's tight turnarounds, right? One of the biggest things are, usually when I was on set, I averaged maybe a 14-hour day if there were no kids on set, because they pump in at a certain time, which is go home early, right? Chucky has kids, so I'm assuming they had pumpkin times.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, in general, at least life before COVID, it was like 14-hour days. Serena, can you shed some light in COVID land? Is it still a long day? And are they pushing to get everything done in one day? Or do you think they've laxed on it because of the COVID protocols and how much time it takes now?
Oh, no, they haven't laxed on it. They're very long days. Like you were saying, it does help that we had a lot of kids on set. So if they pumpkin, they pumpkin. But yeah, they would still squeeze what they can out of the day. I don't think COVID slowed them down in that respect. If anything, it was kind of, it was a motivator to do more because they kind of lost other time. So
time.
Yeah.
Is a majority of Chucky daylight dependent? No.
No, I wouldn't say so. I would say we did equal studio time as well as
studio time. Nights. You guys had a lot of nights?
Yeah, we had a lot of nights. We had a lot of Fratterdays.
My gosh. So Fratterdays, Jordan and Rod, is when you start your day on Friday and then you end your day on a Saturday morning, which is the absolute worst thing you could ever do. Because there goes your weekend.
Yeah,
like, what's up with that?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, Fratterdays are miserable. Are terrible.
Your Saturday is just taken by your sleeping.
Sorry, I just wanted to say that there was another term, and I don't know if this was a film term or just a term I've never heard. In context, I understood what you meant. Pumpkin time. This is a reference to Cinderella and the fact that her carriage turned back into a pumpkin. Is this a common, am I just missing that's that it. This is like a common phrase across like all of culture, or is this a film
land,
like specifically a film thing?
I don't know. Okay. I mean, I've never used this term outside of it.
I think it's a film land term.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause yeah. I didn't know it before, but now that you mention it, yeah, it does sound
it's
absolutely
a pumpkin
ridiculous.
Time. So, depending on their age, whether it's 8 hours or 10 hours or whichever, these kids, pumpkin, yeah, which means they go home because they gotta get offset. Like they whisk away right away. Like they literally can't.
It was
stay
definitely
any longer.
The usage of the they word pumpkin go. As a verb that I was like, never heard that before.
They pumpkin now. there was recent controversy, especially with the tragedy with Rust with Alec Baldwin about measures on set and safety on set. And the biggest thing too is there's an Instagram handle, IA Stories, which is IATSE. A lot of people's perspectives working on film set with tight turnarounds. And a turnaround is essentially from door to door. When you leave work, when do you start work again? Right. And one of the big things is with these harsher, I mean, do you think it's fair for some of these film production companies? I know they've introduced testing, right? And even COVID PA departments and maybe some extra bodies to be on set. But, you know, we want to look at safety on set as a major thing, because it's not only potentially getting shot on set a la Rust, but also potentially catching COVID on set from, you know, whichever, right? Whether it's an individual or a background actor, whatnot. Do you think that film production companies are doing enough? And Serena, you could jump in here, Rod and Jordan as well, in the sense that, you know, they've hired new departments, they've introduced testing, what is it, every 2 days, Serena?
So actually how it worked was the entire crew was kind of put into zones, and based on the proximity that you work in to other people, that kind of deemed your testing schedule. So people in like the greens departments or the painters, they would only get tested maybe once a week. But then there are some people who get tested twice a week, and anybody who is on set, like on set, got tested every day.
Wow. If you're an eight, this is a rapid test, like 15 minutes.
I don't know if it's a rapid test per se, but it's not the full, you know, not the full stick right up the nose. Little nostril rim job. Can I say that? I don't know.
Bruh. Oh my God. aside from the rim job, thoughts, do you think it's not enough or it's enough to keep people safe? Do you think that production should maybe relax on turnaround time and allow people to go home early? I mean, I guess that's also outside of the COVID thing, but 14-hour days, guys, sucks.
That seems like a very separate issue from the COVID thing, because I feel like the turnaround times weren't affected at all, really, by COVID. It was just...
They just kept going, eh? That's insane.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought they would ease up a little bit, but no. No, definitely not. Jordan, Rod, do you think it is... at least with what Serena has mentioned, also the protocols put into place, do you think that's what you expected it to be? I mean, like, do you think it's too lenient or too harsh? Do you think it should be harsher? Nothing?
I mean, I would just categorize my comments by saying that I'm not a health official, so I just hope that whatever health officials have recommended is what's happening, right? Like, I don't want to be any stricter or any more lenient than whatever is the recommendation. Like, whatever experts are saying, I think that's what we should do.
Yeah, I don't have any other opinion other than that. I'm sure they'll figure out a balance of doing too much at the beginning and then easing back and then seeing how that affects things until, I don't know, a return to normal. Maybe some of these practices should be kept in place, like maybe air purifiers on set, cut down on colds and sicknesses in general, right? Like, who knows? But I'm sure they'll.
Serena, do you think the writing was affected in the sense that they had to follow? I mean, they had to do more outdoor versus studio. But you said you had a lot of studio time too. But I mean, like, do you think the narrative played a role in being taken place during COVID production time?
I would say on our show specifically, no. But again, like, I have noticed this in other shows. It's very apparent, but I feel like our show, everybody was just very careful, and it really helped the fact that people were getting tested, especially the actors, people taking off their masks were getting tested regularly. So I would say it didn't really affect the writing or the narrative, but we were lucky in that way.
Maybe there's stuff that happens behind the scenes that we don't even know about. Like, I was just trying to think, I'm like, in the writer's room, if they're discussing, right? What's it called for, I don't know. Like, let's say they want this scene to happen, but they're like, I don't know if we could do this, so let's cut it out and just put it in a studio, right? But yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here.
I have a question for Serena. So Serena, so you're on set, you're obviously 13-hour days and you're mindful that entire time of these protocols, you're watching people. Do you ever find yourself trying to like unconsciously apply these rules outside of work and then stopping yourself from being like, oh, wait, I can't tell people at the grocery store. I can't. I'm not in control of this space. But like, yeah.
Handing out masks. Oh, for sure. Turning on purifiers.
Especially because I would take transit to work most of the time. And so, you know, you see the difficult people on the bus, whatever. I did find myself telling people off and realizing that, like, they don't care. I have no authority on, like, the go bus, you know? But, yeah, definitely. I would find myself being, like, irrationally mad at people in the grocery store. Not always talking to them about it, but just, like, it was very jarring just because of the fact that for most of the production, we were wearing masks as well as shields on top of our masks, getting tested every day.
Oh, wow.
And then when you go out into the public and you see people with their masks around their chin with no two layers, you don't know if they've been tested or anything like that. It really heightens your sense of anxiety, you know? Because everybody's being so careful on the set.
Is it like, so you know how you get tested on set, right?
Yeah.
What's it called? What if it's a positive? Like, what happens? Does everyone freak out? Do they tell the AD department? They're like, uh-oh, abort mission? What's happening?
So
I don't know if you could say if you guys got anything there.
Yeah, but I'll be careful about what I say. But
fair enough. Fair enough.
I can say is there would never be a case where, like, mass panic would kind of ensue because of the fact that we were wearing these tracing devices. So if, for example, there was a positive test, the people who were in proximity to this person would be notified that they were a contact. Those people would be told to isolate. And whether or not it was a large chunk or a small chunk of the crew,
then they decide what they do with the production.
Then, yeah, exactly.
I'm just thinking of Tom Cruise going on the rant again, being like, oh my gosh! And then there goes millions of dollars down the drain, you know? But Jordan, I see you writing something.
I had a question for Serena, and this is a question for you, Serena, and for everyone, but I thought I'd ask you, Serena, because you said you're a writer, and there's an idea of, like, different movies and TV shows writing the reality of COVID into the storyline of the show. So, like, in the universe of that show, COVID happens. In the universe of this movie, COVID happens. Obviously, for anything that's, like, hyper-based in reality, it will have happened. But then there's the option that you can totally do a movie that's set in modern day and then just ignore the fact that a global pandemic happened. A lot of movies have done this. Do you think that's, like, as a writer yourself, like, here, I'll ask you, are you going to incorporate the pandemic into things that you write and ideas that you have for the future? How do you feel about not doing it? And yeah, just thoughts to everyone.
Well, that is the question. But I know that shows like Superstore and like The Morning Show have kind of written COVID into their canon. But personally,
don't spoil me.
I want to forget about it as much as possible. And the thing is, like, people use this stuff for escapism. And this isn't the kind of reality that I don't think adds that much value necessarily to an experience, because we're all living through it. We all want to forget about it. We all want to be out of it. And personally, I just don't really see the need to kind of incorporate it into every story, you know?
I was going to mention, there's a new HBO show coming out called Station 11. That's also filmed here in Toronto. That is also about the, like, a post-apocalypse about a virus or something, right? Do you think there's going to be, like, and this is for everyone, like, a fatigue, right, in terms of these shows coming out? Like, The Last of Us, which is a game that's going to come out next year too, is coming out as well, right? And there, I feel like these plot points and the virus story is kind of all the rage. And I don't know, like, I'm tired of it. But I mean, that doesn't mean I'm not going to watch it, right? But maybe, as Serena said, if you're a writer, maybe you just won't write about it. You know what I mean?
No? Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how, if historians look, I mean, historians in the future will have a lot more content than, like, say we do when we look back at, like, 1918 or the Spanish flu. But it'll be interesting to see them, like, look back and be like, no, the global pandemic wasn't a big deal. Look, they made all these shows where they didn't even incorporate it. And then that's their take, is that, like, it didn't affect them. Yeah. But the actual take is that, like, it affected us so much that we made our fiction not like exist. Like we made our fiction not to not have it because it was just too much to handle day to day that we didn't want our TV shows to have it too.
I'm waiting for like 15 years from now where some like pandemic movie kind of wins like best picture, you know, because that's going to happen. 15
years? Girl, it's going to be like 2 years from now. Let's see what
happens. People aren't going to want it in 2 years. Oh,
man. No, the worst is going to be when the next generation who didn't experience that at all are like nostalgic for it. And then they're like, oh, it must have been so cool or it must have been like so neat to live through that. And we're just like, yeah.
COVID chic.
There was a couple of movies that already came out that's already using that thing. I think what was it? Lockdown. It's with Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anne Hathaway. I never watch it, but I mean, they're using this as a big plot point now. And I'm just so tired of it. And I, you know, as you said, Serena, something's going to happen in the next couple of years or even the next generation, Jordan, that they're going to use this as a thing. So I hope that's it. I'm tired of COVID, but everyone is, right? So unless you're a freak, but anyway. Any last thoughts on COVID or filming in the time of COVID, or I don't want to just say COVID or even talent with COVID. That was a very juicy topic, Rod, that you opened up.
Who do you think is an actor that is anti-vax? I'll go first. I bet you Matthew McConaughey has not been vaccinated. That man doesn't wear deodorant because he doesn't find it natural enough. I have high doubts that he... I also think, other one, Chris Pratt.
I think he's doing
a lot of voice work. I was going to totally say Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt was my pick.
This is perfect. Oh my gosh. Jordan, any secret celebrity thoughts? Gwyneth Paltrow.
Aaron Rodgers' spouse, what's her name? Shailene Woodley. Also, probably not vaccinated.
I'm going to guess that the woman who got kicked off of The Mandalorian for her bigoted views.
Gina's
probably not vaccinated.
Favorite segment so far.
Weekly segment? That's terrible. I guess that's it. We can wrap this up. We got a little more for you guys when we come back after this break.
The Layered Butter Podcast is brought to you by Red Squirrel Tail. To learn more about them, let's hear from the founder.
Hi, I'm Allison, and I create handmade needle felt animals under the name Red Squirrel Tail. I make custom dogs, cats, and woodland creatures like chipmunks, squirrels, and birds. I create ornaments and handmade wreaths inspired by nature and wildlife. If you're looking for a thoughtful handmade gift any time of year, visit my website at redsquirreltail.com.
And we are back. We're going to wrap up this episode, but we wanted to get into our favorite segment or one of our favorite segments in Film Club. Usually I would drop something here about something watched or I've watched recently, but I'm going to turn it to Jordan and Rod for anything that you would recommend for Film Club. Anything? Rod?
Yeah, as we were talking about filming in times of COVID, I thought I would recommend Love in the Time of Cholera. It is the film adaptation of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's famous 1985 book of the same name. It's a love triangle in Time of Cholera. One of the characters is Dr. Juvenal Urbino, who is dedicating his life to eradicating cholera. The main story doesn't necessarily involve a disease, but it's set in that reality. Now, it is a movie that was not received super warmly, but I think it has, as a Latino, as a Hispanic, I have a different appreciation for it because it draws a lot from soap operas, Hispanic soap operas that we grew up watching. And so to be able to see this was a very special moment. I think people should check it out. Give it a watch. And also it has a really great song by Shakira called Despedida, which is goodbye. And it's like, if you're imagining your whenever, wherever, this is not that. This is like a very guitar driven, powerful ballad that is really, really good. And it was even nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Song.
Hey, 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, though.
I will say, like, Rotten Tomatoes is a very white audience. So, you know, when movies are not a white thing, like, it's it doesn't fare well.
Jordan, what are you watching or what would you recommend?
So under the theme of isolation, I'd like to recommend that 2013 movie Locke, starring Tom Hardy, directed by Stephen Knight.
Question mark? Yeah.
The entire movie takes place in Tom Hardy's character, Ivan Locke, his car as he's making a drive across Britain. And the entire movie is basically just the conversations he's having in this car. Very stressful conversations in his entire life and work and relationship. And everything is chaotic and in the balance. And he just has to drive and calmly talk. And it's riveting. And it's just him alone in his car. So would have been probably easy to film during COVID times had they tried to. Mm-hmm.
How do you guys feel about bottle episodes for TV or movies, something like that? I feel like you need a very compelling, right, to keep things interesting.
I think bottle episodes work in like season three of a show because you kind of know the characters and you can build up some drama and some tension and like have them just rub up against each other in a little bottle. Although I did watch season one of The X-Files has a great little bottle episode where it's basically a ripoff of The Thing where they're at an Arctic research base and there's a killer bug that's attacking them, but they don't know who's infected. So I don't know. I like bottle episodes. I guess they can work at any time. And I reject what I said earlier.
I think it's the series dependent. It's too broad a question to say yes or no in one way or another. Like some work, some do not.
So that's it for let's move on to Rod's favorite. Rod, is this your favorite? No, this is your thing. Hot Butter Takes. This is where we drop some unpopular opinions or controversial opinions every week on the Layered Butter podcast. I will start, and I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I don't know if it's just Netflix, but some of the streaming channels, whether it's Crave, HBO or whatnot, but Netflix specifically. So when you're on the app and then you're looking at episodes or TV shows, they would show maybe a clip in the background or a shot from the show. And sometimes if you're in the middle of the first season or second season, you will see characters that haven't even met, or there's a big plot point of them meeting at one point in that picture. And you're like, oh, so that's going to happen, right? And I hate it. I just hate how all these streamers don't kind of like preview the plot points for their... I guess it's a lot of work and they want to hire people. But I mean, to choose what shots or what descriptions they're using for some of these clips, because it could be terribly spoiler for whoever's watching it. Also, Oscar clips and like Golden Globe clips, sometimes there are major spoilers in these clips that people are watching and they don't understand it until they get there. But when they see it, they're like, oh, this is going to happen. And I think it just ruins experience. So my take is just get rid of those clips or screen the clips before or pictures and make sure it is just neutral to any audience watching it. So you will not have an expectation of what's coming up. I don't know if it's
or maybe allow people to choose their settings kind of thing, because I feel like there must be some people that would rather see like the meaty scene to get into it, even if it's a spoiler, and people like us that probably don't want to be spoiled.
It's not even like the clip sometimes though. Like it's literally like the Netflix image for the show. Like literally a couple of months ago, I was watching Midnight Mass and I finished it completely. But then I was watching it again with my boyfriend and they changed like the cover photo of the show to be a huge spoiler for the show. Like you spend the whole like first half of the show being like, what is this creature? What is this mysterious creature that we haven't seen yet? And they just literally put the image of the creature.
You know, you want to cover up I never watched Midnight Mass yet, and I was going to. And then now I feel like I've bamboozled myself by opening this story, by this conversation. But now knowing that the
my complaint about the Netflix images is that the algorithm has obviously understood that I am a gay man and has decided that no matter the genre of film, it can be like a depressing drama they find like one guy that is hot and just like serve it as the image. And I'm like, this is like borderline homophobic like, at this
they
point.
Know too
like,
much
you don't
of
need
me.
To make everything about like what hot dude is in this movie to make this man watch this like otherwise good movie.
Oh man, they know too much about you, Ron.
That just gave me an idea for our Patreon people. We should record a segment, a video segment where we share our screen and we walk each other through each other's like Netflixes just to be like, that's what you see. That's not the images that I get for that TV
our
show.
Fans.
For the fans, yeah.
Rod, you want to segue into your hot take, buddy?
Yeah, sure. Ridley Scott needs to shut the fuck up. Like, buddy, so he is on one. He started, I guess, like obviously they ask every director about like what their opinions are on Marvel movies, which is like already a whole
Martin
separate
Scorsese,
like hot take that I could do. It's like, do we ask people like what they think about like romantic comedies or like it's just like this incessant thing? People want clicks, whatever. But the more offensive part is that after that, he blamed the lack of box office for The Last Duel on millennials who have grown up attached to their phone. I'm sorry, millennials are nearly 40 years old now. Like, I think what he means is like maybe Gen Zers or like the generation that came after. Like, I think let's keep in mind Ridley Scott is an 83-year-old man who probably does not have like the best grasp of like for him, everyone 50 years old and down is a child. But I will say, blaming his lack of success on like people being attached to their phones is like borderline insulting when other movies have done fairly well. And then recently he got interviewed again because like this man is on a tour for House of Gucci, and he was talking about how he had considered doing it with like in Italian, but then he was like, people don't watch movie with subtitles. This man probably has not even fucking seen Parasite that we all saw and we all enjoyed that had subtitles. And then he went on to say that he was so convinced by the voice acting by Jared Leto and Lady Gaga. And you know what? I just need this man to shut up. I'm already going to go watch his damn film. I don't need to hear all these things that he keeps on talking and talking that make me less inclined to support him. I've been sour on his interviews ever since he talked about like the whitewashing in his movie Exodus and saying how basically you know, if he makes movie with non-white people, the studios won't finance it. And perhaps it's right, but it makes it no less racist that you're whitewashing an entire society just because, you know, you can't get money otherwise. So Ridley Scott, if you are listening to this, please shut the fuck up, man. Just shut up. You don't have to take every interview. You're 80 years old. You make movies whenever you want. Just stop talking. Just stop doing interviews. You don't need them.
Hey, Rod, do you think it's time to take out the trash? That's my Lady Gaga.
When I sleep tonight, I'm gonna pray to the Father, the Son, and the House of Gucci. If you can please shut the fuck up.
Oh man, Serena, that was your exposure to the Rod hot take. I missed it. It's the best.
Oh no, it was great.
Jordan, what you got for us?
Yeah, remind me never to go after Rod because I can't match his energy. My hot take is about the movie Tick, Tick, Boom, which I watched last night.
Buddy,
I've been seeing a lot of praise. Like, I even looked up online and saw all this praise about this movie. I think
you saw my letterbox, didn't
by
you?
By online, do you mean letterbox?
Maybe. Anyway, so this is my hot take. Tick, Tick, Boom is a celebration of theater kids for theater kids by former theater kids. And I'm an outsider to that world, and I just don't think it succeeded in necessarily making me care.
You gave it 2.5. Come on. Sorry, I'm looking at your
Jordan
box right now.
Mr. Jordan Sloggett, I have not seen it yet, but I do want to give this voice of support to this particular anecdote where our friend Rafael Cordero shared in our mutual group that this is perhaps the best movie or movie of the year.
I said best movie of the year?
And then like I go to Letterboxd and he had given it 4.5. His wife gave it like 3, I think. I was like, okay, so maybe not movie of the year.
I really liked Andrew Garfield's performance. Some of the songs were fun. I don't know how I feel about Lin-Manuel as a director. It felt a little chaotic and like, it felt like there was a lot of direction. I don't know if it was
already,
good, good direction. Serena, have you seen Tick, Tick, Boom? Or do you have any interest in it?
Not yet, but as a former theater kid,
I know,
I think,
it.
Hey, apparently it works great.
Taught by the same drama teacher.
Apparently exactly, it's like exactly. Crushing with that demographic. Like people were talking about how there's like a diner scene that's like theater kids, Avengers Endgame
everyone
for theater
is,
kids.
Yeah, and exactly. Like, everyone's there.
I'm excited for that one, actually.
It's not the best song,
okay,
though.
I'm ready to cry.
Oh, see?
Yeah, I was watching that scene being like, oh, I recognize the two ladies from Hamilton. And that's it.
If Patti LuPone is not there, I'm turning off the movie, is all I'm going to say.
But you know what? You summed it up really well, though. It is a celebration for theater kids, and like former theater kids. It's totally a love letter to that. So maybe there is my bias, and I admit that. But it's still a great movie. I mean, my wife was a theater kid. I mean, she liked it.
So she didn't love it. What would her score have been if she wasn't a theater kid?
Wait, probably yours.
So just another half star off. So it's not that big of a difference, yeah. Right? I guess.
Serena, what's your hot take? Take us home.
Okay. Here's my flaming hot take.
Here we go.
No movie needs to be over 2 hours.
Rod, feels vindicated here.
I want to be amazed. I want to go home. I don't want to sit there until my butt hurts in the seat and I have to go to the bathroom. I get bored. Dune, way too long. Way too long.
Oh my
God. I was going to say, we all want to agree until you mentioned a movie that we think is perfectly justified in its length. So.
I will say, Rod, come on. That it's like, I'm like, I guess what my point of view is that a movie can be longer, but it needs to warrant it and have good pacing that it doesn't feel like it is longer than that. Yes. And I have not seen that succeed yet. And so I feel kind of like the Taylor Swift song that's like 10 fucking minutes.
Hey, song of the year? Question mark.
This boring ass song did not need to be 10 minutes. You could have said the same shit in 3.5 minutes. So it's like, unless you have a stronger argument for making it longer, don't do it.
I feel hurt. This entire section is always the Raff abuse.
Yeah, I mean, I just say I have to defend, like you said, Lord of the Rings, all of them are like over 2 hours. I like all of those, but then I haven't had to sit in a theater to watch those, right? So I get to pause them when I go to the washroom 3 times during the movie. And I did have to pee by the end of Dune. I like Dune. I'm glad it was as long as it was, but like, yeah. Could it have been just as good in 2 hours? Probably.
Breaking news just shared by our founder, Andrew Perugia, into our podcast shared group. PTA has just said that he would prefer if all movies were 2 hours long. That's when movies are at their best. The Oscar-nominated director said, I've missed that mark multiple times, but that's really the goal. So, Serena, you're in good company.
Exactly.
But you're in good company.
PTA makes movies that are like 2 hours and 45 minutes.
I've missed Magnolia, that mark multiple times, but that's the real goal.
Do we know what's the runtime of Licorice Pizza?
Whatever it is, it's going to be the best movie of the year. Question mark?
Let's hope it's 2 hours. Otherwise, his comments are going to look dumb.
2 hours and 13 minutes.
Well, see, this is one of those things. It's so easy to be like, yeah, everyone, make your movies under 2 hours. And then they sit down and they're like, okay, what do you want to cut to make yours under 2 hours? And they're like, I can't cut any of this. It's all gold. I can't. And then it's like, all right, well, yeah.
But is it
really gold?
It's like the Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman. That did not need to be however many days it was.
That didn't need to be anything. Yeah.
But listen, it makes a great miniseries.
But then make it a miniseries, not a
just divide it up yourself. Oh, come on. I'm okay with long movies. Long movies are great. It's worth the price of admission.
I'll say that I agree that
this is just you liking your value for your money. I think it's like a minute per dollar proposition that you're looking at here.
I'm getting my money's worth for this 3-hour movie.
Serena, I'll agree with you that 85% of movies should be under 2 hours, and most movies, I'll also go as far as to say 75% of movies should be 1.5 hours long and no longer.
Yes.
I will also say to young filmmakers out there that if I know nothing of a movie and even if I've heard the movie is bad, if you tell me that the runtime is 90 minutes, I will give it a chance. If you tell me that the runtime is 210 minutes, that's not happening.
Yeah, I'm not even looking at it.
Maybe for young filmmakers, but I mean established filmmakers, Scorsese, PTA, these guys.
No.
These guys. Oh, come on. Anyway, that's our hot takes for this week. And that is our episode. Serena, thank you so much for being part of Layered Better in this episode and sharing your thoughts on your Chucky experience.
Thank you guys so much. This was fun.
Thanks for coming along. Is there anything you want to plug, or do you have a letterbox? Can we find your
reviews? I do have a letterbox. Hey. It's just my first name. It's just my first name. S-A-R-E-E-N-A.
Damn, you got that handle, eh?
I know.
Jumped in pretty fast.
So check out Serena's reviews on Letterboxd. I'm awaiting your Tick, Tick, Boom review, and I'm sure it's going to be 4.5 like mine. Former theater kid. again,
well, it depends on the runtime. It depends on the runtime, eh?
Okay, it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something like that. Fair enough. again, my name is Raf Cordero. You can find me on Letterboxd, J. Raphael. Jordan, where can we find you?
You can find me on Letterboxd at J. Sloggett, J. S. L. O. G. G. E. T. T. I hate having a last name I have to spell every time, but it is what it is.
Well, I feel like I need to spell mine because Raphael, like the Ninja Turtle with a PH, but I'm R-A-F-A-E-L. But anyway, Rod, how about you, buddy?
You can find me on all social media platforms, including Letterboxd at rcockting, R-C-O-K-T-I-N-G.
Cool. Again, thank you all for listening and tuning in. We'll be back next week for another episode of Layer Butter. But for now, see you later.
Bye.
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 Bye.